Ezra and Nehemiah, we'll look at those two books together. They, those two individuals and those, the period of time for which they relate somewhat similar. And so we'll study them together. They're the primary source of information for the period of time from 536 to about 430 B.C., give or take a few years. Those are estimates, because most people say that Ezra wrote all these books. And unless he came along pretty late in there, well, he could have lived that long, I guess. But Judah, it's at this time, during this period of time, that Judah is in Babylonian captivity, or about to go in Babylonian captivity, or just got back from Babylonian captivity from 536. In fact, in 606 B.C. Was the first wave of captives that went into Babylonian captivity. So 536 is when they came back, which was a 70-year period. Look at Daniel. You say, why Daniel? That's way on over. Well, let's look at Daniel. We find it's not really, even though it's way on over in our Bible, it's not way on over as far as a period of time. And sometimes I need to be shaken about that and bring that to my memory. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Of course, first part of Daniel is where we read about, you know, Daniel and Meshach, Shadrach, and what's-his-face? Abednego. And those other names that they give him. But in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, that's at the beginning of this Babylonian captivity, and they're saying that Nebuchadnezzar was on the throne by some archaeological scheme, I assume. They can tell that was about 536 B.C. That seems like that'd be a little tricky, but I think there are ways probably to narrow that down, and many people have come up with that same year. Although I'm a little suspect when I see that, because, you know, you say, well, there's a number of scholars that come up with that. But I find out when I read some of these so-called scholars, seem like they all say the same thing many times, but you look at it, you see that they wrote maybe 40, 50 years apart, and you wonder if the later ones are not copying the earlier ones. So I guess we have to be careful about these so-called scholars. But apparently 606 B.C. was the first wave of captives going from the land of Judah into the land of Babylon, in captivity. Just the first. There were two subsequent deportations, 597 and 586 B.C. So keep in mind, and I think these are two things maybe to keep in mind. Number one, the northern kingdom, comprised of 10 tribes, was taken into captivity back in a number of years before, 721 B.C., if I remember correctly from a few weeks ago. The Assyrians came and were God's instrument in punishing Israel, the northern kingdom. And then the southern kingdom, or Judah and Benjamin, were taken into captivity beginning in 606. Jeremiah is contemporary with the events of the history of these of Ezra and Nehemiah also. In fact, let's look at Jeremiah chapter 25, verse 12. I think I have that in your outline. You don't want all of my outline, because you'd have about four pages, and it'd take them 2 weeks to type that. Daniel 25. Not Daniel 25, but Jeremiah. I believe Daniel has 25 chapters. Jeremiah 25, verse 12. Shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished. And he's talking about the king of Babylon. Let's look back in 11. This whole land shall be a desolation and astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. It shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished, completed, that I will punish the king of Babylon, and that the nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it a perpetual desolation. Similar to what we were studying in Zephaniah, that indicates God was going to do to Assyria, because they did what they did in an unholy way against God's unholy people, Israel, the northern kingdom. Now, during the 70 years from 606 to 536, we don't have anything. There may be something written by in one of the Psalms that speaks of not being able to sing a song. I forget. I don't know whether it was in Babylon or something of that nature that someone has suggested could refer to that period of time. It wouldn't have been written by David, but it could have been written by someone later. So Ezra and Nehemiah pick up the story of God's people right after they come home from the captivity. Okay, so there's 70-year lag from the time they went into captivity to the time that Ezra and Nehemiah pick it up. Look at Ezra 1, 1 through 4. And it doesn't speak about Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar was 70 years before this time. So we're talking about 70 years later. First year of Cyrus, this is in Ezra. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, it's over in those areas, right before Job, and Psalms, and Proverbs, and whatever follows that. Song of Solomon, is it? Ecclesiastes. Now the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled. How about that? Just talks about Jeremiah. And the Lord stirred up his spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, build the house of the Lord, God of Israel, he is the God, which is in Jerusalem. And whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver, with gold, with goods, with beasts, beside the freewill offering for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. Go build the temple. God has told me God is in control of King Cyrus. King Cyrus might not have... history probably, well, doesn't tell that. It tells us about Cyrus, but not of God being in control. But we find that Cyrus's creed come in about 536 B.C., and the history of this period continues for a number of years until Nehemiah, who was a civil governor of the land of Judah, his reign ended, I think, or his second governorship began in 433 or approximately B.C. And it's likely during this interesting note by one writer, it's likely during this period that the term Jew was first used. The word Jew was used instead of the word Hebrew that had been used before, or children of Israel. Because, and it's just like us, they called it a linguistic situation or process involving the word Judah, but it's almost like it's an abbreviation, really, isn't it? And it might have been all a slang, I don't know. But Judah, Jew, would be a short abbreviation for Judah. And originally, of course, it meant one from Judah. That'd be easy to figure out. Background for study. If you don't have too much on yours, I have a little bit more. The two books were primarily treated as one prior to about 1448. There was a Bomberg Bible I never heard of until I researched this. But at that point in 1400, they first separated these into two books. And also, there was a time when evidence suggests that they might have been part of the Chronicles, and that the Chronicles would include Ezra and Nehemiah, similar to the two Samuels being together, the two Kings and the two Chronicles. Also, someone thought that Ezra and Nehemiah likely was a part of Chronicles. And just as the people were taken in three stages, they came back in three stages. And each stage of the coming back of the captivities to Jerusalem had some importance. The first stage was we mentioned, 536, 70 years after the first deportation. The temple, it was for the purpose of rebuilding the temple, and dedicating the temple. And Zerubbabel led that group. And somewhat later, Ezra led a second group home for the purpose, or at least the primary purpose, of bringing a spiritual revival to the people. And then a third wave, just about 13 years later, Nehemiah led this group, and the purpose was to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. So we've got them back into the land. So what are some messages that we find in these two books? Well, number one, if the people find out that God is faithful to his promises, he had promised through Jeremiah that although you will be punished, now I don't know how long the people lived at that point. They're not living 969 years like they did back at the time of Methuselah. But they're living probably more than 70 or 80 that folks live now. But that's increasing. We hope it increases, don't we, some of us. But the people of God needed to know that they could trust in God. And God needed a people that would trust in him. So God faithfully fulfilled his promises to the people. And the books tell us of the restoration of the Jews into the land, the restoration of much of the of what was done under the law of Moses. If you go into a foreign land, you know, the people of God, when they came into the land of Canaan, I had a tendency to forget God. And so I'm sure, though we don't have a record of it, but we can tell by the time they came back, you know, a generation had passed away. And so they had to be taught again. And so Ezra reteaches them, and Nehemiah reinforces that as they seek to. Ezra was a priest and a scribe, according to Ezra 7, 6 and 7. And his ministry is summed up in one verse in Ezra chapter 7, which says this, "For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord, and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments." So that was his primary purpose, to invigorize the people of God, or to reinvigorate the people of God. Nehemiah had been a cupbearer to the king, which was a pretty prized position for a king of Persia to have a Jew as his cupbearer. And I think we recognize what that job was. He didn't just carry the cup around. He checked out the food, especially the drink, before the king partook of it to be sure that people weren't giving him poison. And so he was the cupbearer to King Artaxerxes, according to Nehemiah 1, 11 through 21. And he was allowed to return, and we'll look at that in more detail in just a moment. Allowed to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls, and became civil ruler of the people. He joined forces, of course, with Ezra, who was sent back to be a reformer, or to glorify God as far as the law of Moses was concerned. A very crucial time in the history of God's people. They would come back in the land, and in effect, they could have a new start. And sometimes the new starts are great, and sometimes they're not so great. So they needed two great leaders, and they had them in these two men. Now, some themes or lessons And I just looked at two. King Cyrus of Persia, lesson in God's control of history, and Nehemiah, great servant of God and a dynamic leader of the people of Israel. Let's look at this idea of God in control of history. And a lot of times we forget that. I know I make comments, other people make comments about how this country is going to the dog, so to speak, and yet God is in control. That doesn't mean the country's not going to the dogs, though, because or another country is not being led in a way that that may not be a positive influence for Christianity. But the Bible tells us that in the beginning, God. As Christians, we believe that God was in control then, and that God has not let control go to anybody else since then. He's not relinquished control. Jesus, it says, in him all things consist. I think of gravity. God loses control, I lose control. I don't stay on this earth. My oxygen content cannot be regulated properly, you know. I don't get the proper amount of oxygen that I normally do if God is not in control. I think man would have different ideas about that as to who should be delegated certain or given certain amounts of oxygen or whatever. But in the beginning, God was there in the beginning. Revelation 21:1 says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth will pass away. God is going to be there when this heaven, this earth passes away. Do we think that God is any less in control in between? Two verses we'll look at. Romans 13:16, I've got them written down. Did I put it down in your notes? Probably not, because I couldn't make your notes any longer and get it all on one page. So, Romans 13:16, if you want to jot that down. We studied it recently. For everybody who was here on Wednesday night, really it's Romans 13:1b. It just looks like a 16. For there's no power but of God. Those on Wednesday night remember that. The powers that be are ordained of God. Are appointed of God, are ordered of God. That's what's currently going on. That wasn't just in the first century. God is not, as I mentioned this morning, is not a puppeteer with strings hanging down his fingers to the leaders of all country. But Acts 17:28, when Paul was in Athens on Mars Hill talking about the unknown God, and glorifying the God of heaven, he said, for in him we live, we move, and we have our being. That's right now. That's right now. God in control in the beginning, God in control in the beginning, in between, and God in the control when everything is consummated. In Ezra chapter 1, 1 through 4, we read it earlier, Cyrus makes a proclamation that God had charged him to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. You say, well, what does this foreign king, this heathen king have to do? Well, God is in control of the nations. God was in control of this king. King says, he gave me all these kingdoms. God let me do, he lets me rule. At his leisure, Zerubbabel leads that first group into the city of Jews back home from a Babylonian captivity. And years before, Isaiah had prophesied the role of Cyrus in doing this. In Isaiah 44, beginning with verse 28. Let's look at Isaiah 44. Oh, well, that was lucky. Turn right to it. Isaiah 44, verse 28, last verse of Isaiah 44, about the middle of the Bible. That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, God speaking about this king, and shall perform at all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Verse 1 through 3 on 45, chapter 45 of Isaiah. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, his anointed, his appointed, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him. And I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee, make the crooked places straight. In other words, he's going to make everything where what he says is to be accomplished can be accomplished. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. I will give thee the treasures of darkness, hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which called thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. So Isaiah, years before, spoke the name of Cyrus, that Cyrus would be the one who would help to rebuild, or see that the temple, that the people got there to rebuild the temple, and that there were the necessary resources. You know, it wasn't an easy task for people coming back out of captivity and saying, okay, who are we going to get the help, where we're going to get the materials, and how we're going to pay for them. That was evidently taken care of by God through his instructions, through his servant, Cyrus. Second lesson. You probably heard some lessons on Nehemiah, dynamic leader. Great leader, great servant of God. Let's look at some verses that pertain to Nehemiah. So let's turn right over past the ninth chapter of Ezra, and then past the tenth chapter, to the first chapter of Nehemiah. Nehemiah 1:1-11. We won't read that, but let's read that. 1-11. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, it came to pass in the month Chislu in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, here's Nehemiah, he's in the king's palace, Cyrus is the king, Artaxerxes is the king, I believe. But anyway, Cyrus, one of the brethren came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped. They'd come back to talk to him, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. They said to me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and approach. The wall of Jerusalem also was broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, fasted and prayed before the God of heavens. Now let's go down to verse 11, where he talks to God again, or in that prayer, it beseeches him. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants, those people who come to him, and who desire to fear thy name and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was king's cupbearer. He's going to ask the king, Artaxerxes, if he can go back into, this is a later time than Cyrus, because this is the third wave of going back from captivity. He's going to ask the king if he can go back to the land and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Nehemiah was a man of prayer. We just read that, verse 4. He wept, he mourned, he fasted, and he prayed. In verse 6, it also says, let not thine ear be attentive, or let thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee night and day, or day and night. So he was a man of prayer. He was a man who cared for the people. Look at chapter 2, 9 and 10. They're going to have some trouble from the people round about. He said, I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with him, but Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, heard of them. These people were already in the land. It grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Nehemiah sought the welfare of his people. He made a good leader because of that. Nehemiah, man of courage, chapter 6, verse 11. Chapter 6, verse 11. And I said, should such a man as I flee? There was a time when he could have fled into the temple for protection. But he said, who is there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. I will not escape my duty, my responsibility before the people. Courage, it said, is the virtue that makes other virtues possible. Somebody with courage will start a group to doing something. Nehemiah, also a man who encouraged others by his action. Look at chapter 2 and verse 20. When the people were prone to have a do-nothing type attitude, Nehemiah said, we got to get out of this rut. Then answered I them and said to them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Talking to the people that they were trying to horn in on what they were doing and to stop the work. Look at chapter 4, verse 14. We'll just use that verse and move on to the next point. 4:14, I looked, rose up, and said unto the nobles and the rulers and the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren. So he said, you know, be men of action as I am a man of action. He encouraged others to action. He was a man of the word. He directed the people to the word of God. Look at chapter 8, verse 14. Chapter 8, verse 14. And they found written in the law which the Lord had commanded by Moses, and the children of Israel should dwell in booths of the feast, in the feast of the seventh month, feast of the tabernacles. He restored that observance, the feast of the tabernacle. Look at chapter 9, verses 1, 2, and 3. As he talks to the people and reads the scriptures, and because of the reading of the scriptures and their activities on that day, they are brought to repentance. Now on the 20th and 4th day of the month, the children of Israel were assembled with fasting, with sackcloth and earth upon them. And the seed of Israel separated themselves from all strangers and stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. They stood up in their place and read in the book of the law of the Lord, their God, 1/4 part of the day. 6 hours, I guess that'd be, wouldn't it? 6 hours. And folks don't like 40-minute sermon. Anyway. And another 4th part of the day they confessed. And they worshiped the Lord their God. Nehemiah was also a leader who listened to people. Look at chapter 5. We'll look at some of those verses in the first 7 verses just to get an idea that he had a sympathetic ear. There was a great cry from the people, their wives, and against their brethren, the Jews. They were said, we are sons and our daughters are many, and we got to do this, we got to pay this, we've mortgaged our houses, our lands, our vineyards, and we might buy corn because of the drought. And there were also, he said, we borrowed money for the king's tribute and taxes upon our lands and vineyards. Look down in verse 6. At Nehemiah's response, I was very angry when I heard their cry in these words. Then I consulted with myself, and I rebuked the nobles and the rulers, and said unto them, ye exact usury, every one of his brother. And I set a great assembly against them. He rose up against them. He spoke out against them. He spoke on behalf of the people. The test of any leader is found in the results. Nehemiah 6:15, it says, the wall was finished. The wall of Jerusalem was finished. In conclusion, a few words that I gleaned from writing of Brother Joe Hopper, A Year with the Bible. He mentioned about Ezra being a priest and a scribe, and of course a scribe was their teacher of the law, and when they returned from captivity, it was this teacher of the law that brought religious reformation among the Jews in Palestine, returning them to the institution set up by Moses, and Nehemiah, we'll look at comments about Nehemiah, but Nehemiah was worked hand in hand with Ezra. The Jews ascribe these works to Ezra. Now, I don't see them mentioned here, but the institution of the synagogue, this is something that's not mentioned. I don't know whether it's mentioned in the writings, but this is something the Jews ascribe to them. The settling of the canon of the scriptures. I know that's not in the Bible itself. In other words, what books are to be in the Old Testament, because there were some other writings. And the Jews, the Hebrews, say that Ezra had a hand in doing that. That also that he was the author of Chronicles, Ezra, and Nehemiah, and some would add Esther. Because they think the book of Esther was somewhere in this period of time. His contemporaries were, of course, Nehemiah, that's a contemporary of Ezra, Nehemiah, who was the governor, and prophets Haggai and Zechariah. A couple of comments about book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah gave up a position, a prized position in the palace of the king, and requested permission to go to Jerusalem. Permission to do a job for which he would get little thanks, because he would have a lot of obstacles to overcome. The people would want to quit on every hand, and there were enemies that tried to stop the work, and yet despite these obstacles, Nehemiah, being a dynamic leader and a great servant of God, was able to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. They needed that for protection. They needed that protection because they were still getting attacked, even though they weren't large forces. They were still getting attacked by people. And he rebuilt those walls, and he helped to lead that reformation that Ezra worked hand in hand with him. And it says his governorship covered a period of about 26 years. So there we have a real quick overview of Ezra and Nehemiah for your consideration. I have an outline to look at if you want to look at those two books in more detail. Is anyone here tonight that needs to respond to the invitation of the Lord? The invitation song has been selected and announced. If you're not a Christian, why not come to Christ tonight? If you need the prayers of the congregation on your behalf, we'd be glad to pray for you, pray with you tonight. If there's something amiss in your life between you and a brother, that needs to be resolved. If there's something amiss in your life known between you and God, that needs to be resolved with God. And if you need to rededicate your life to Christ, you can do that before the congregation tonight. You stand and sing.